Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. I hope you had a nice weekend. What a beautiful chunk of weather. I was around all weekend. I hope you enjoyed the same and maybe even got some yard work done. Ha ha. Always good to get that done. We've got a great show this morning. My friend Patrick Albanese will be with us in just a minute. And a little bit later on in the hour, Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, who was recently voted Professor of the Year. So we're going to be bragging him up big time. Because he is just such a great friend of the show and so smart. And if you are in the listening area of Hartford, I'm going to be actually in Hartford on Thursday, Friday broadcasting. And if you want to come poke around and see how the sausage is made and how we do the show, you can email hello@walnuthillcc.org. And they can arrange for you to come and sit and watch the show. We'd love to meet you and love to get to know some of the listening friends and folks in the Hartford area. So, again, that email address is hello@walnuthillcc.org. 1 Thessalonians 5 says, "Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus." I think we try to do that as the body of Christ, because I don't know if you can always rejoice always. That takes some work. So maybe while you're a little bit blue, maybe there's someone in the body of Christ that's able to rejoice always at that time and build you up. I think that's what we have to do, is constantly be in the body, building each other up. Pray continually. You've probably hit a flat spell of prayer before. I know I have, where you're just so overwhelmed sometimes you just can't even pray. And that's when you get together with a friend and they pray for you. And give thanks in all circumstances. Sometimes that's tough, but believe me, there are people that can stand in the gap, be there for you. I think that's what God wants us to do, is be in community. And, you know, you discover friendship, and I hope you've discovered Faith Radio, because if you have, thank you. And now it's our job and to forge that friendship and make it stronger and hope that we can build you up and give you encouragement and a little bit of levity and get your day started here on the show. So we're going to continue the show with my friend Patrick Albanese. And he is already on the studio line, I believe. So let's just take a short break and then join Patrick in just a minute.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
It is 8 minutes after the hour. My friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese, is on our studio line. And Patrick, good morning.
Good morning. You had the good weather too. We did.
Oh, fantastic!
What a
weekend. Yeah,
I know. I got a just a screaming head start on killing plants this year.
Do you ever go to the place where you buy them and just kind of look over them and wonder which ones are going to die first?
Yeah. We kind of have a pool. You like plant dead pool, and I decided this year to kind of eliminate the middleman, and I just went ahead and bought the plants and hand fed them to the bunnies. Said, "Look, you know, you guys are probably getting tired of digging these things up.
Yeah.
I'm going to just do my part. Here you go. Well, you like pansies? These are delicious.
Yeah.
So I understand if you like them when they're young, and when they're fully mature plants, they're not as tasty. So what I did is I bought some little seedlings for you.
Yeah.
And here you go. Have at it.
Yeah. Okay. Riddle me this. In Madison, Wisconsin, a guy known for loving McDonald's, Big Macs. Just got done eating his 30,000th burger. I had to make sure I got that right. How is this guy alive?
What was that movie? That was it, Supersize Me, where the guy would, like, you know, ate nothing but McDonald's for a week and he was near dead.
Yeah.
But Wow, 30,000.
30,000. And he said that approximately 90% of his diet is probably Big Macs.
Wow.
Now, this is where this is where the scales got tipped for me. He also proposed to his...
Funny you should use that analogy, the tip of the scales. Okay.
He also proposed to his wife in the parking lot of his local McDonald's.
Okay, you said wife. That means she accepted. So.
Anyway.
Well, you know, sometimes when you buy the Happy Meals, you do get some pretty impressive, like, secret decoder rings. So she probably's like, look at that. Wow.
Yeah.
I've had some friends that have had some unusual diets like that, and it did not work out well for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to knock McDonald's, which has saved me many days when you're trying to feed kids.
No.
In fact, I was making their lunches already earlier this morning, and I bought them a surprise, and I said, oh my gosh, look what I've done. All the things that I've sworn off of, like Pringles. Here's some Pringles. Here's some Twinkies. What else you guys want? Here's a sugar, you know, laced beverage. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to put some coffee in there while I'm at it. What the heck?
Yeah.
They can enjoy it.
Yeah. Now, I was traveling this weekend, so I did not pay a lot of attention to the most recent updates with Robert Mueller and what's going on with the prosecution, if any.
Yeah, he's had, you know, a couple of weird setbacks. One judge kind of chastised him a bit, saying, it looks like you're just trying to set up Trump. And the judge says, you know, I'd like to see what exactly is your authorization? Like how expansive, how extensive is this probe of the Russian collusion? Where are we on this thing? And I guess the Mueller team didn't necessarily want to, you know, hand over that information. And they claim that they have some sort of secret authorization. I know it sounds like we're in you know, Animal House, Dean Wormer territory, double secret probation, but he's got some sort of secret prosecutorial, and that's not even an easy word to say, any time of the day, let alone early morning.
Right.
Big trouble powers. Let's just call them big trouble powers. So the judge was like, I'd like to see the memo from Rod Rosenstein that kind of outlines how broad is this?
Mm-hmm.
And he had another unusual setback. I think that happened on Saturday, because a month or so ago, when people started going, aha, the trap is tightening around Trump, because Mueller had evidently indicted 13 Russian companies for taking out, I don't know, some not so very good Facebook ads that evidently influenced the election.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they had a court date, and some of the Russian people sent lawyers to represent them, which I guess Mueller was not expecting. They weren't prepared to hand over, you know, any evidence or any discovery process where it's like they showed up. What do you mean they showed up? So the team wasn't ready, and they had to ask for a delay so they could provide some of the materials that these defense attorneys were asking for. And I'm thinking, whoever these Russians are, they're pretty clever. They must have figured that these indictments were just a bunch of nonsense, so he can say, look at me, I'm doing my job, you know, kind of like things you and I would do at jobs in our lifetime, saying, no, really, you can write that paycheck. I did my job.
Mm-hmm.
So I who knows where this mess is going? The whole thing is getting – we're not even talking about Russian collusion anymore.
What are we talking about?
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. What are we trying to find here?
I don't even know either. It's very confusing. And where's Comey in all this right now?
He's relaxing just a little bit. But uh-huh. I don't know what his fate is. It doesn't look so good. I'm realizing these people, it's kind of like you know, the Roy Scheider character in Jaws, where he says, we're going to need a bigger boat. These guys are saying, we're going to need a bigger bus, because they're throwing – people are getting left and right, getting tossed under that thing. And oh, my mm-hmm. goodness.
This thing it's been so picked apart that I don't even know what we're supposed to be looking for anymore.
No, and one of the things that you and I have we discussed this off the air as well, in equally lively and fun conversations.
Of course.
Yeah, of course, you know, and hence the birth of the show, saying, boy, wouldn't people love to listen into these.
Exactly. If we could just get a radio show, people would like to listen to this conversation.
Wouldn't they just love to listen to us yammer about nothing? Boy, oh boy. But I don't know where it's going. And the thing that I do know is that everybody that has any kind of adrenaline junkie addiction every day opens up, you know, the Drudge Report of the newspaper and says, oh, my gosh, it's happening, whatever it is on either side of it. And then only to be let down. And I say, you know, you got to wait for a lot of this stuff to just take a vacation from it, folks. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's nice that we had the nice weather. I think a lot of people got outside.
Yeah.
And luckily for me, you know, my iPad, you can't really read the screen in that bright sunshine. So you set it down and you say, I think I'll just dig in the garden for a little bit and play with the kids. And because whatever they're talking about today is going to be corrected tomorrow. Corrected. Mm-hmm. We were wrong.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah. And a lot of people go outside and they go, natural light, get it off me. So there's that instant, you know, assimilation into the outdoors. But it's a good thing to do. Take a little break. Patrick, let me take a little break. When I come back, I've got several more questions for you. Be ready. It's 60 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Patrick Albanese. Be back in a minute. It is 18 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Glad you're with me this morning. Talking to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. Patrick, as I understand you were at a school show for your daughter, and they sang a song about the presidents. I want to hear about that in just a minute. Oh. But I'm interested, too, about how history gets rewritten and how I think who is responsible when history gets rewritten? Is it primarily the liberals that want to change the way things were and go forward, or is it the conservatives?
Well, you know that old saying that, you know, the history is written by the winners. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you read the story of how something happened. And the very popular musical Hamilton, you know, Hamilton was people didn't like him. Evidently, he was a lot like your Uncle Vinny, you know, that guy. It's like, you know, we got to invite him. He's family, but he's so vocal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what created this musical sensational phenomenon is the book that was written. And a guy had discovered a lot of letters and said, oh, I see. There's a lot more to this Hamilton character that we didn't know. And it's not that it just got buried, but it's that the people that lived on beyond him said, oh, I hated that guy. I hated him. And they didn't necessarily speak nicely of him. And I look at sometimes our history. I think it's Dennis Prager has often posed this thing where he takes JFK's one of his famous speeches, removes the references to JFK, and then plays portions of it. You got to remove some of that, you know, that Northeastern accent.
Right.
But and it says, and we talk to college kids and say, you know, is this a Republican or a Democrat? And then the kids will, that's Republican with that whole, you know, lower taxes kind of thing in this. And he says, well, no, this was JFK, and he would probably not get elected these days. Mm-hmm. And I often see that it seems to come from the left where they can say, hey, I see, you know, those Republicans. Okay, yeah. All right. We'll give you that Lincoln was a Republican. We'll give that to you. And we'll give to you that he was pretty instrumental in freeing the slaves. But see, really, technically, he was a Democrat. And the Republicans of then were really the Democrats of now. And then the jerks that were on our side are actually you guys. And I go, we play this all the time. And, you know, even as recently as the Civil Rights Movement, you see, I think it was Al Gore's dad even filibustered against it. Mm-hmm. You know, Robert Byrd was a grand Kleagle in the Ku Klux Klan, and he was pretty – he did okay.
Yeah.
As a Democrat. And they say, yeah, well, yeah, he's the new Democrat. That was the old Democrat, which is you guys. That's mm-hmm. you guys, actually. Now mm-hmm. that and I say, well, we can play this game all day long, but the history books hopefully have it right. I don't know. Don't you run into those things on Wikipedia and you say, is this right? And then, of course, Wikipedia, you can go in and you can alter stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I blame Wikipedia if I get my anniversary wrong. I say to my wife, I'm going, I looked it up on Wikipedia. They had it wrong. It's not Paul.
It's always nice to have an out, isn't it? For dates like that?
Yeah. Now, granted, I've used it 10 times.
In 10 years.
Yeah, I think it's wearing thin.
Yeah. But when you look at things like the NRA, I know there's been discussion, and it's come up recently, that there was a branch of the NRA that started in 1957. And it was, I think the gentleman's name, if I can recall, Robert, I can't think of his last name now.
How fast can you Google?
I'm Googling right now as fast as I can. Anyway.
Wait a minute, Robert. Yeah.
Robert
okay.
Who? It was, anyway.
It wasn't Robert. Yeah, I know that.
Yeah. But anyway, he started a branch of the NRA in 1957 to help African-Americans equip themselves to defend themselves against the KKK.
I've heard that story, too. And now I don't know enough about the history of the NRA to know. Is that true? Did you find Robert Williams, not to be confused
yes.
with Robert?
Robert Williams. Yes.
Right. So I've heard that story as well. Are you saying that it's not true? You've done further research?
No, I have found that to be, I have understood that to be what's been written. I assume it's, there's truth to it, but I don't know. But have you ever heard that before?
I have heard that one before.
Okay.
But now the thing is, as you know this, what is that the lie gets halfway around the world before the truth puts on its, laces up its shoes. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's true. Is it just something – you know, you can't even joke around these days without something spreading like wildfire and somebody says, well, there's this guy who said that. And then the next thing you know, we're quoting things as truth. I mean, even I think like to tie into, say, the Mueller team or Rod Rosenstein last week was saying you can't believe all these things you're reading. They're not all true.
Mm-hmm.
There's you see these stories in the paper. It's that's not what's happening. I don't know if it's just that we need this constant stream of information. We've got this hunger, isn't it? Do you miss the days where, you'd say, "Gosh, it looks like Gilligan and Skipper are really gonna fix this time," and we're gonna have to wait till next week.
I know.
To find out what happens.
I know.
A week.
I know. How am I
really
going to survive?
Off the island.
Right.
And then you went outside, you played some baseball, and you made it. It didn't haunt you for the full week. It, you know, Tuesday rolled around, you said 7 o'clock. You know, you couldn't set the VCR. So dinner, mm-hmm. I mean, your mom was on it. She's like, we got to do dinner early tonight because Gilligan and Skipper, they're going to patch that boat.
Yeah, they're going to get that radio to work.
The professor invented a rubber compound out of the bark of this coconut tree. I don't know how he did it.
Yeah.
The radio still works.
Yeah.
We got to watch.
How come the professor just never figured out how to fix the boat?
I have no idea. He kept the radio going. They were able to actually fashion a bicycle out of bamboo that was able to power that radio so they could say, oh, in the mainland over there, which is evidently close enough to pick up this radio signal, they still haven't found us. Gosh, what a great stupid show.
Yeah. Oh, it's lovely. Anyway, it's kind of a nice way to start a Monday. I mean, it is springtime. It is kind of nice weather, and it's nice to get out and start resetting life a little bit. Isn't it important to, especially if you're living in the upper Midwest, to sort of get out from being indoors and just start enjoying the outside a little? Not that I want to do it, but I mean, others do.
No, but don't you go out and watch people garden in your backyard?
I do, yeah. That's a sport.
I do a great job. And, you know, and school's going to be ending soon. The kids had their little musical. My daughter was in this little play called The Kid's Life, and they lost power, and they couldn't use their cell phones and iPads and all the other things, so they had to, like, play games. And in the middle of it, they had this President's song. So, you know, the entire third grade has memorized, and they're singing this song with all the president's name in it, and they're trying to get Wilson to rhyme with Coolidge and Hoover and Eisenhower. And then and for some reason, as I'm sitting there, I'm thinking to myself, in Cuba this song is really pretty easy. Okay, let's do the presidents. Castro, Castro.
Castro, Castro,
Castro. Castro, Castro. And it rhymes every time.
Everything works, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Everything works. I go, you know, they keep talking about how their education system is superior over there. I go, well, of course. How much time do they spend memorizing presidents? It's done in like 3 minutes. My kid took a month to learn all the president's name in sing-song fashion.
Oh, so, my gosh. That's fantastic. This is the kind of information I rely on you for every Monday morning.
My information isn't even going to help you play a game of Trivial Pursuit. Just
no,
so
it's
you...
not. It's not. Patrick, thanks so much. I'll give you a buzz after the show.
Great. Thank
all
you.
Right. 27 minutes after the hour. Let's take a little break and we'll come back. Lots more. Ukulele music in the morning kind of gets your day going. It's half past the hour. We're going to take a little news break, and then Professor Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, who, by the way, was voted Professor of the Year. So we're going to chat with him in about 8 or 9 minutes.
Nothing that's been created can even come close to God's brilliant idea called the family. This is Jim Garlow in a special series for the family. God cares deeply about families because it's his strategy as the greatest transfer of values ever. It's way beyond what any school system can do. And I'm not trashing schools. Teachers are heroes to me. But the fact is, what the family can do as a distiller and handler of values for children, there's nothing like it. It's direct and intentional, deliberate, and it happens as a component of the home. So what's the atmosphere of your home that conveys values in ways you may not even know? Here's my question, and an assignment for you. To what extent is your home a direct, intentional conveyor of values? Think about it, and in the process, I suspect some things may change. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Twenty-four minutes until the top of the hour. My distinguished guest on our studio line happens to be Hillsdale College Professor of the Year for 2018, Adam Carrington. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing?
Good. Let me start with what I'm kind of excited about. First of all, congratulations, Professor of the Year. How cool is that?
It is very cool. And I was just saying, talking off air, just how... what a great privilege it is to teach here, and just what great students there are here to do so. This is an award given by the students, by the senior class, and they're actually the class I came in with. This is my fourth year. They were freshmen my first year. A lot of them had me because, you know, all the upperclassmen took professors they knew.
Oh, yeah.
And so this has been a really special class. At a really special place. I was very surprised I got it, but very thankful that I get to do this with the students here.
Yeah, well, congratulations. You deserve it for sure. Now, Saturday was the commencement at Hillsdale College, and you had a pretty cool commencement speaker, Vice President Mike Pence. Did you get a chance?
I should say, yeah. I apologize. It's actually this coming Saturday.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. I was unsure. I thought it was this last Saturday, but it's this coming Saturday. Now, are you going to get a chance to meet him, do you think?
There is a chance. Partially, I'm going to be in the color guard, which is going to come out at the same time he does.
So okay.
There's a chance I could. I'm going to be carrying the Hillsdale flag, but that would, of course, we're very honored that a sitting vice president would be willing to come. And a neat extra thing about this is, the person that is writing his speech, or is at least the head writer for his speech, is a Hillsdale alum who is working in the vice president's speech writing office. So that will just add a little bit of extra just honor to the fact that we get to host a sitting vice president.
Really, really fun. Well, congratulations again, and I'll look forward to a conversation about maybe you get a chance to meet him, and whatever tidbits you have for us will be great. All right, let's jump into some of the news. This Iran deal, is it falling apart or what's going on?
It really seems to be, and it seems to be sort of people talk about a slow motion train wreck. This might be the definition of it. It's been, you know, months in the watching, and I think the latest bombshell that has come out recently has been Israel showing that in some ways Iran came, as many people accuse them of, to the deal in bad faith, that they said they weren't starting a nuclear program that was trying to do anything but make energy. They were trying to merely they had no weapons intentions, and Israel through their very good sleuthing that they were able to do, mm-hmm. was able to come up with hard evidence that that was not the case, that mm-hmm. they have been pursuing this kind of these weaponized nuclear options for a while, which in many ways shows bad faith coming into the deal, and you know is very plausible grounds for saying that they have not fulfilled their obligations in the deal either.
Mm-hmm. So when we find out that Iran was this nuclear deal was built on lies, how do you move forward with any kind of negotiation, knowing that to be the truth?
Well, you know, a negotiation is often supposed to be built on an idea of good faith on both sides. Mm-hmm. Words replace force when words actually have truth behind them, or at least have a goodwill behind them. And I think that's shown that this is not the case. And I think, President Trump has threatened that, he has to decide by May 12th whether to certify that the deal is still being followed, and I think there's just a heightened chance that he'll pull out of it, and I think this is ammunition in his favor to say that this was a deal that he's been justified to criticize, and that America should rethink, if it's going to make a deal with Iran, whether this is the actual right deal.
Mm-hmm. Adam, when the Obama administration negotiated some of this stuff, what do you understand their understanding was?
I think, and this is hard to, I can't get into their minds entirely, but I think there's been some good writing that has said that in many ways I think they miscalculated Iran and its intentions. And I think that miscalculation comes from sort of giving them too much credit, believing that their antagonism to us was merely because of our own mistakes, and not that we haven't made foreign policy mistakes, but that was it, that they didn't have a deeper criticism of us, that if we were good to them or respectful of them or gave them financial incentives, that would get them to abide by things we asked them to do. And I think that was just a miscalculation. I think Iran's criticism of us and the rest of the West is much deeper, and therefore their willingness to act in good faith with us is much thinner. And I think the Obama administration had an overly rosy view of what negotiations with across that divide could accomplish.
Mm-hmm. So, Adam, if you think of the Obama administration, and at the time I think John Kerry was the Secretary of State, and he was kind of in charge of a lot of this negotiating, and it was probably, if you look at his career, one of his more significant accomplishments, wasn't it?
It was, and I'm glad you bring that up, because there's this story that has leaked out that allegedly he is behind the scenes as not Secretary of State any longer, trying to put pressure, meeting with foreign diplomats, meeting with others in the international community, trying to push saving the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as I repeat, he is not Secretary of State.
Right.
And I think that, there's been a lot of accusations by Democrats of violations of this thing called the Logan Act, which is an old 1700s law that no one's ever been prosecuted under, that you're not supposed to, as a private citizen, try to make deals or negotiations with hostile foreign powers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if ever there was going to be one, this seems as good a one as anything Trump administration people were accused of during the transition period. And I think it really shows a lack of understanding of how international relations is supposed to work. We're supposed to have a unitary executive that is the face of America in foreign negotiations and for others to try to undermine or discredit or finagle that behind the scenes, regardless of what their previous status was, I think is a serious breach of how our constitutional system is supposed to work, even if it's not a legal violation.
Mm-hmm. Adam, how was the Trump administration viewing this in light of all the behind-the-scenes stuff that John Kerry's attempting to? And I think it's obviously highly unusual for a former Secretary of State to be as involved as he is. How is the Trump administration viewing this?
Well, the stories, a couple of the stories I've read, there was originally no comment from the Trump administration. But I think that what I have heard people say, when I say heard, I've read people off record say is that, you know, this is just another instance of the parts of the Democratic Party and parts of those who are not fans of the president not willing to play by ethical rules and not being willing to go by the protocol that we our constitutional system directs in their opposition. And I think that it shows a lack of foresight that even, you know, what happens, I would just say to those on the Democratic side, what kind of precedent does this set? Is this really the precedent that you want going forward? Would you want Mike Pompeo or other, you know, former Trump Secretary of States doing this in the future on other deals, the other deals that a Democratic president might be brokering?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you have to trust and believe in how the system works and work through your goals in that way, not through trying to undermine it. And I think a lot of people are not understanding the danger of by any means necessary to your own ends.
Mm-hmm. Adam, let me take a break. When I come back, I want to ask you about Marco Rubio, and I know he's been discussing the tax bill, and also I've got just a whole idea of a victim mentality that seemed to dominate the left. So I want to have that discussion with you when we return. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Adam Carrington is my guest, professor of the year at Hillsdale College. We'll be right back. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, and I was looking at some of the criticism that Marco Rubio has on the tax bill. I think he was suggesting if he would have been president, he might have cut the corporate tax rate a little bit less and then just maybe done a little bit more to let companies write off the cost of investments. What are your thoughts on that, Adam?
And I should say that he made points similar to this during the actual process. He actually wanted to expand who was eligible for the child tax credit, for example, to give it to more working class families. And I think what he was trying to do is not torpedo the bill or you know, after the fact, you know, have buyer's remorse. I think he was merely saying that it did good things, but there are other things that need done and emphasized beyond just a corporate tax rate cut, that in some ways the Republican Party has been selling that as the cure of all ills. And I think his argument is it's not. And I think another thing it brings up is there's still a lot of disconnect between the working class Republicans that have become more and more a part of the party and expanded even greater in the 2016 election with President Trump, and the old, more pro-business establishment part of the party, which was much more happier with that with the details of this tax cut. And I think what he's trying to do is saying, I don't want to lose either wing of the party, and that the corporate tax rates made one side happy, but can we do more to help working class families at the same time? And that I think his criticisms were to say, this is how it could be better, and this is a blueprint for future ways that I think goes beyond just the tax cut. I think he is making a good faith effort to try to say what kind of policies could actually bring these two wings of the Republican Party together that have been so at times antagonistic toward each other over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Adam, I know we're all, you know, looking for Jesus, whether we know it or not. And it seems that that there's a certain victim mentality that exists, especially with the left. You find that to be true?
I think so, and I think bringing those things together in that way makes a lot of sense, even though it might not immediately seem that way. And there's this great article by Michael Brendan Daugherty on National Review. It's actually in the magazine. It's called The Church of Grievance. And it starts out where, as if it's going to be a pretty typical conservative critique of the victim mentality of the left, and that they try to gain political power by playing the victim. But I think that what he does in a very, I think, perceptive and charitable way is to say that there are some deeper longings underneath this. That what happens when beings that were meant to worship God, know God, be loved by God, reject all of that, set all that aside or ignore it. And basically he's saying you can't get away from the fact that there is evil in the world, and you can't get away from the fact that people will look for saviors, and they'll look for sacrificial figures, and look for forgiveness and repentance, and demand it even at times. But I think his point is how distorted that gets apart from Christianity, and that a lot of our politics is trying to play out Christian and gospel themes without the actual gospel or Christianity, and that a lot of the victim mentality is an attempt to self-deify and make yourself a kind of Christ-like figure in relation to others, and not a positive way. I know often people talk about that in good ways, but I think a very destructive way.
You know, Adam, in the 1960s, the kids would say, question authority. Now those kids are the authorities, and you're not allowed to question anything they say. Is that a cycle that's going to repeat itself?
Yeah, that's a strange thing with the baby boomer generation, that of which my parents are part, and I'll be careful. You know, I'll try to respect my parents, but their push was to tear down, and I think there was a certain creative energy to that tearing down because they had something against which to react, but they didn't rebuild where they deconstructed. And I think that what they're trying to hold on to, and what I think millennials and the generation after that are struggling with, is, what can we build in this very fractured society? And I think what fills that vacuum is power. When you don't have right principles, when you don't have an appeal to nature or to the good or something along those lines, or to grace or the gospel, then I think what you're left with is a mere vacuum that gets filled with, I'm stronger and I can impose my will upon you. And I think that is what, in too many sectors of society, we're in danger of and have fallen into.
As you know, we're kind of wrapping up our time here, but I was thinking of some of the brouhaha that has gone on in the media with the Kanye West tweets, and it's been interesting since his tweeting, the black male support for President Trump has doubled from 11% to 22%, and in the unsure category, it's gone from 1.5% to 7.5%. You speak about little blocks of power and influence. That's kind of an interesting statistic.
It is, and if it were to hold up in the election, in the voting booth, it would actually be a significant difference. And that's going to be, I think, a really interesting and important question going forward. You know, the African American community has for a long time been very lockstep Democratic in its voting patterns, even as people have tried to argue that there are that there are openings and windows, you know, that the African American community, there are messages that can appeal to that community, but Republicans have struggled with it. And I think, you know, Kanye West, I think, and some of what some of the other people in the hip hop community have actually said recently, maybe say that there's even more of an opening than before to those kind of questions and those kind of arguments. I think it's something that needs to be explored, and people, I think, need to do a lot of listening to each other across that divide in hopes of bridging it.
Mm-hmm. Adam, always so much fun talking to you. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. And also, again, congratulations on Professor of the Year. That's really cool.
Oh, thank
you. I'm really proud of you.
Well, I love being on here, and I love the students here. And, you know, thank you for – you guys are part of the many, many graces I have in my life.
Yeah.
I've been very overwhelmed by all of them the past few days, so thank
you. And if I was in person with you right now, I'd grab your cheek and, you know, shake it back and forth the way my Aunt Franny used to grab my cheek.
Well, my grandmother, too. God rest her soul. Maybe she'll do that in heaven, too. Maybe they'll let her.
That would be nice. Thanks, Adam. Have a great day.
You, too. Thank
you. 4 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one.
Early to bed and early to rise. Well, you're going to need the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio to find out what you missed.
Thanks to the Professor of the Year, Dr. Adam Carrington, for being the guest on the show this morning. And Patrick Albany's always fun to catch up with Patrick and find out what's going on in his neck of the woods. We have a great second hour planned ahead. Colin Hanson from the Gospel Coalition is going to be with us. And then we're going to do some serious foreign affairs analysis with Dr. David Aikman. There's lots going on around the world, and he's got his thumb on the pulse of it. So that is going to be what's ahead in hour two. Thanks for listening. The Action Study Bible giveaway is in full-fledged this month. We're giving away one each week. So visit myfaithradio.com and enter to win. Hour two, just ahead. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.